that you repeat. And I think I ate about 12 croissants. I thought, I've paid for them, I will eat them.
Hello and welcome to another episode of
Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
I'm Craig.
And I'm Reza.
And we're here to help you improve your English and take it to the next level. Grow your grammar, vocalize your vocabulary, and perfect your English pronunciation. In this episode, Reza and I will be talking about air travel. We're going to help you communicate better when you travel by air, when you fly. But before we speak about air travel, let's look at some listener feedback we have from Alba from Madrid, who asks us, what's the difference, please, between remind and remember? Reza, I think we've explained this before.
Yes, I seem to remember explaining this before, but it's not a bad idea to do it again because it's very important.
I see what you did there. I seem to remember. Yeah. Very quickly, let's recap, which means let's revise.
And for those who've heard before, let's remind you.
Let's remind you of the difference. So remember is when you think of a memory, un recuerdo, a past experience. For example, I remember the first time I arrived in Valencia. I came by bus. I remember the river, thinking, why is the river dry? Why is there no water in the river? So I remember very clearly my first sight of the city of Valencia. Do you remember the first time you came here?
Yes, I remember arriving in Valencia and the bus station and thinking, my God, it's hot here, because it was September. So that's one use of remember. Remember plus ing. I remember arriving in Valencia.
So that's something in the past. You're remembering past. A past experience.
A memory. You have a memory of something. Whereas remember plus infinitive is another meaning. For example, as I was leaving my house, Craig said to me, remember to bring the notes to the podcasting session. Remember to bring the notes. In other words, don't forget to bring the notes. So I hadn't brought the notes yet. He was asking me to remember to do something in the future, later. So remember plus an infinitive, remember to bring, is to not forget. In other words, to, in the future, bring the notes. That's so remember plus
so
infinitive.
When you use an infinitive, it has a future idea or a future connotation. Exactly. Let's remember to thank our sponsors at the end of the podcast. Yep. When it's gerund, you're going back to the past. I remember recording the podcast last week.
Exactly. And then we got remind, Craig. What about remind?
Remind is when a person or a thing makes you think about something. For example, I have an application on my phone which reminds me to take my medicine. Notice that there's an object straight after remind. It reminds me, remind you, remind them to do something.
Or it could remind me of the time when I went on holiday with Berta.
So you're reminded of things.
Yes, so you can be reminded to do something. So as we said before, remind plus an infinitive, remind, that means it makes you remember to do something in the future. Or something can remind you of something you've done in the past. That would be ing. I was reminded of meeting my wife many years ago when we heard the music that we heard that same night. Yeah. When I met my wife, we were listening to Elvis singing Jailhouse Rock 20 years ago. And yesterday we both heard Elvis Jailhouse Rock, and it reminded me of meeting my wife. So there's two meanings of remind as well. But basically, remind is it makes you remember.
Yes.
I would simplify it to that.
Using the example I had before with remember, because I said remember, I must remember to thank our sponsors at the end of the podcast. So that's with a future intention. So that's remember to thank, infinitive. With remind, if I want you to help me, I would say, hey, Reza, please remind me to thank our sponsors at the end of the episode.
In other words, make me remember.
Make me remember. So I could summarize and say, people are reminded of things and it doesn't really appear in your head. It's not in your head. People remember things. It does appear in your head. It's a memory. So remember is the person doing it themselves, and remind is another person, i.e. Reza, making someone else remember.
Another person, or it could be another thing.
Or another thing.
For that music reminds me, a person or a thing.
Yeah. When I hear REM, the group, it reminds me of living in another country, because that's where I first heard the music. It reminds me of good times 10 years ago.
Is there any particular music which reminds you of certain places, Craig?
Definitely, definitely.
Does REM remind you of anywhere in particular?
Yep. REM reminds me of when I was traveling through Europe with my friend, and we traveled through France and Italy and Greece, and we were camping. We had a tent. And we had two or three cassettes. Do you remember cassettes?
Cassettes, wow.
Really,
cassettes.
Really old technology. Cassettes with a Sony Walkman. And one of the songs we had was, or one of the albums we had was the REM album. So just, I remember walking and waiting at the side of the road, trying to get a lift, hitchhiking. So whenever I hear REM, it reminds me of traveling through Europe with my friend.
So, Alba, we hope that that has helped you understand better the difference between remember and remind.
Remember, you can always ask us more questions by contacting us, and we'll tell you how at the end of the episode. So, now we have a message from Mamin, who speaks about an episode we did a few weeks ago when we gave you top tips for going to London as a tourist. Here's Mamin.
Hi, Craig. Hi, Reza. This is Mamin. I've been listening to your podcast, the one about London. I like it so much because it reminds me when I was younger and I was living there for a month, more or less. It was a long time ago. And I remember all the places that you talk about in your podcast. And I like it the way you do it, as always. And, well, only to say that one of the things that I liked the most when I was there was the Regent's Park, because I was very surprised, because all of the gardens, the plants, the flowers, it was amazing. So apart from the all of the streets, the houses and everything, I think that Regent's Park, it's in my mind because of that. So thank you, and a big kiss and a big hug. Bye.
Thank you, Mamin. That was a nice piece of feedback. Reza, what do you think?
Yes, it sounds very interesting. By the time this podcast goes out, we'll be back from London, and we'll let you know what we think about Regent's Park. Sounds really good.
And thank you for your message. Just one small thing. The word surprised, be careful of the pronunciation. When the final consonant sound is voiced, that means when there's vibration in the throat, like with a z, or a n, when there's vibration, then it's a d sound, with words like surprised and learned. Apart from that, your message was perfect.
We'd just like to remind our listeners about something that Craig and I both enjoy, which is the iTalki service. Remember, we both tried it ourselves, Craig for Spanish and me for French. You can try iTalki for your English. What is iTalki? Well, iTalki is an online service where you can practice your English with a native speaker. You can choose the teacher you want. You can look at their profile. You can find out when they're free. And you book a time. You've even got different prices according to the experience and the qualifications, etc., of the teacher. You can find out in their profile all of this. All you need is to register and have Skype so that you can start talking to your teacher online. To get you started, you could join up through inglespodcast.com. Just click on our link, inglespodcast.com/italki, and register. And italki will give you, as an inglespodcast.com listener, 100 free credits to get started. Give it a try. If you like it, fantastic. If not, no harm's done. We think you will like it. So why not give it a try today?
And Reza and I would like to say thank you to italki for sponsoring Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. So today we're going to look at air travel vocabulary. And if you remember, we've spoken about travel in general in the past, but not specifically traveling by air. So we'd like to focus more in detail on air travel. Now, do you remember when you pay for a ticket for a bus, for a train, for an aeroplane? What's the name of the price you pay for traveling on those things?
Mm-hmm. I would say fare, F-A-R-E.
Right. So of course, if you're traveling by air, it's the airfare. So you're paying the airfare to travel, the price of the ticket.
By air. And of course, if you're traveling by bus, the bus fare, or by train, the train fare, the taxi fare, etc.
F-A-R-E. Yeah. First thing you do when you arrive at the airport probably is to check in. You check in at the check-in desk and they'll probably ask you where you want to sit. Well, they don't these days, do they? They don't ask you. You have to tell them.
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they do.
Do they?
Yeah. For me, it depends. If you're one of the first people, sometimes they give you the option when there are plenty of free seats. But if you arrive near the end, they don't tend to give you an option.
Where do you like to sit? Where do you prefer?
I prefer the aisle seat.
A-I-S-L-E. Be careful with the pronunciation. Aisle. The same pronunciation as I apostrophe double L. I will. Aisle and aisle. Exactly the same. Is it the same in Belfast?
Yes. Aisle. Yeah. But some people prefer the window seat, which is obviously the seat beside the window. Which one do you prefer, Craig?
I prefer the aisle seat because at my age, it's easier to go to the bathroom.
True.
Very true. You don't have to disturb people. I think British people don't like to disturb other people in the aeroplane.
And I suppose that's even more important if you go on a long haul flight.
What's a long haul flight?
Well, that would be a long international flight.
That's haul, H-A-U-L.
So the opposite of long haul is short haul, not a long distance. For example, Craig?
Well, if you flew from Paris to Frankfurt, for example, it's a short haul flight. It's not a very long flight. But if you flew from Madrid to New York or San Francisco, it's a longer distance. It's a long haul flight. Also, you can have a domestic flight or an international flight. Obviously, international is from one country to another country. But if you fly on a domestic flight, you're flying in the same country. From Madrid to Barcelona or from San Francisco to New York.
Yes. So not all domestic flights are short, by the way. From one end of Russia to the other, from west to east in Russia, would be a domestic flight from St. Petersburg to Vladivostok. But it would be long haul. It would be about 7 hours.
Very long, yeah.
Whereas if you fly from Paris to Frankfurt, that is short haul, but it's international because it's from France to Germany.
Don't confuse the verb to fly with the noun flight. Sometimes I hear Spanish speakers say my fly is at six. It's my flight. Now, fly is irregular. Past of fly is?
Fly, flew, flown.
Fly, flew, flown. So F-L-E-W is the past tense and F-L-O-W-N, the participle. I've flown to many countries.
Craig, about how many times have you flown in your life?
Quite a few. You know, I love traveling and all the listeners know I love traveling. So yeah, I've flown many, many, many times.
Mm-hmm. As Craig said, don't confuse fly and flight, because quite often you can buy a flight which is open. That means you go out on a certain date, but you don't know your return journey. You haven't decided a date yet. However, if your fly is open, that's quite different. What does that mean, Craig? If someone says, oh, my fly is open. Fly.
My fly is open. I can come when I want. Mm-hmm. Yeah. With your fly is the zip
cremillera
on your trousers.
Right.
So if your fly is open, then the zip is open.
Yeah. Whereas if your flight is open, that means the return journey of your ticket has not been decided yet. Quite different things, as you can see.
A red eye flight. What do you think a red eye flight is?
I'm not sure, actually. I can guess, but I'm not that familiar with it. Is it a flight which gives you red eyes?
It does. Why does it give you red eyes? It gives you red eyes because it's very, very early in the morning. It's like a 6 o'clock flight, so you wake up at 3:30 or 4 o'clock to catch the flight. Or you're flying during the night, so you don't sleep very well, so you arrive at your destination very tired and with red eyes. It's more common in America, this expression, but I do hear it a lot. I'm catching the red eye. So I'm catching the really, really early, unsociable flight, the red eye flight.
So, Craig, when you check in, what do they normally give you?
A boarding pass. To board means to get on, subir. So you can board a boat, you can board a train, you can board an aeroplane. And boarding is the action of getting on the plane. So the pass lets you board the plane, which is why you hear in the airports, flight 762 to Paris, now boarding at gate number 7. A gate, what's a gate?
Puerta, but puerta in an airport, that type of puerta.
Yeah.
Don't confuse boarding pass with ticket. They're not the same. You bring your ticket, perhaps or perhaps not. It depends on the airline.
Or your e-ticket.
Maybe it's an e-ticket or maybe just a reference number. You bring that to the check-in and then you check in and then they give you the boarding pass. But of course, these days you can check in at home online and print out your own boarding pass.
Have you ever used the mobile phone as your boarding pass?
No, I haven't. Have you?
No, I don't trust it.
Me neither. I wouldn't.
I have the feeling I'd get to board the flight and they'd say it's not working. We need your ticket. Well, I don't have my ticket. I have that fear of not getting on the flight.
Yeah.
Because the app's not working or something goes wrong. Yeah.
Or the battery goes at that moment.
Exactly. Yeah. I see people doing it, though. I see it's very common these days.
I think it's very risky. I wouldn't risk it. I usually, nearly always, in fact, I check in online and print out my own boarding pass. But on a phone app, too risky. I wouldn't do it.
Too risky. So there are different classes. You can get tickets for different classes on the plane. You can have the way I usually fly, which is economy.
Me too.
Which means cheap. Or you can go to a higher, more comfortable and more expensive class, for example, business or first class. Have you ever flown business or first class?
I once flew business reluctantly. Reluctantly means,
really?
Yeah, de mala gana o no quería, simply because there weren't any other seats. It was Christmas and I waited too long.
But why did you fly reluctant?
Well, it was Christmas and I waited too long to buy my ticket. It was a couple of days before I had to go.
Oh, okay.
Tickets get sold out, se vende todo, sold out at Christmas. And I really wanted to go back to visit my family. He said, nope, we have no seats at all except a couple of business seats, which are double the price of the normal seats. So I had to travel business. But it annoyed me because I didn't want to spend so much money.
And was there that much difference?
Well, they give you free breakfast. And they didn't know about me. They didn't realize how greedy I was. They give you free breakfast and they let you repeat. And I think I ate about 12 croissants. I thought, I've paid for them, I will eat them. And I was hungry, so I ate about 12 croissants.
So you wanted to get your money's worth, yeah. Which mean, what does that mean? Get your money's worth. Sacarlo todo.
Sacar provecho, yeah. Si. Aprovechar. Yeah. So they said, another croissant? Yeah, another. And after about eight, the stewardess just said, help yourself, I'll leave them here. And I had another four.
That's funny.
But, you know, if you think about it, they were the most expensive croissants I ever had in my life because they doubled the price.
I only once flew business class, but for a different reason, because I'd bought an economy class ticket, but there'd been some double bookings on the flight, which means that two people had bought the same seat in economy, a mistake that the airline made. Mm-hmm. So when I was about to board, the flight attendant or the ground crew, one woman said to me, I'm sorry, sir, there's been a double booking. Would you like to fly business class at no extra cost? Yeah, of course. So I flew business class. It was a European flight, an international flight, and it was great. The only thing, the stewardess didn't kind of looked at me and believed that I was a business class passenger. I think three times she checked my ticket. I must have looked really scruffy. I was quite young. You know, my hair was quite long. And I don't think she believed that I should be with these business travelers in suits. But it was a really, really great flight. Champagne, really good food, comfortable chair. It was wonderful.
So they upgraded Craig for nothing. They upgraded him. They raised the level of his ticket from.
Exactly. It was an upgrade. It was an upgrade to business class. And it was really, really good in-flight service.
Aha. What do you mean by that?
The way that they give you free croissants.
Yes, 12 in my case, yeah.
The way they give you free champagne and the way they treat you, they're more polite. And it's just a nicer experience. But it's two or three times the price. It's really expensive.
Here's a little insider tip. An insider is kind of el que sabe. You know, you wouldn't normally know this unless you'd done it. My parents flew quite often to the Middle East or to Pakistan or that part of the world. And quite often there'd be a lot of Muslims on the flight going to places like Pakistan, India, or even going to South Africa, you know, places like that. They stop over in Qatar and Saudi Arabia and all these places.
So they had a stopover.
You stop and perhaps the plane refuels. It gets new fuel and it continues. So here's the insider tip. Because there are many, many Muslims on these flights, Muslims don't drink alcohol. If they're strict Muslims, they're not allowed to drink alcohol.
Right.
But particularly if it's a European airline, but even if it's not, they probably have alcohol. And my parents normally traveled just economy class, but hardly anybody wants the alcohol because they're all Muslims. And they tend to give you free alcohol because hardly anybody else wants it. And quite often my parents would get free champagne and wine because they had too much alcohol, because they don't know until people get on the flight and they can see that they're Muslims and they're not going to drink alcohol, that they've got too much on board. And quite often they'd say to my parents, listen, we've got lots of champagne and we don't know what to do with it. You know, we've opened some, you know, for the staff. Would you like one? And it's a little insider tip.
So that makes the flight even more entertaining.
Yes. Yeah. Although another tip is don't drink too much if you're arriving in an Islamic country. It's probably not a good idea either. But a little glass or two won't do any harm, will it?
It's not a good idea to land drunk. When you check in for your flight, then the person checking you in will ask for your luggage or your baggage. Is there a difference between luggage and baggage?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of. They're more or less interchangeable. Although there are certain collocations where we tend to use one. Like we talk about excess baggage. It's not typical to say excess plus luggage, is it?
No, excess baggage is too, the bags are too heavy. Mm-hmm. And hand luggage, you wouldn't say hand baggage.
Not to, yeah, exactly. Although they mean the same thing, but that's just the collocations.
Also in psychology, you can have baggage from your life. For example, if you say he's got a lot of baggage because he's had a divorce, his parents had problems. So you can have psychological baggage, but you wouldn't say psychological luggage.
No. No, definitely not.
So you get an allowance of for your luggage. You get so many kilos, maybe 15 or 20 kilos. If you have more than that, it's excess baggage. And sometimes you have to pay. Usually you have to pay.
And as we all know these days, well, particularly in Europe, you really don't want to have excess baggage at the airport. If you pay in advance, okay. But if you arrive at the airport and you have more than your allowance, we all know what happens. For that small amount extra, you're going to have to pay a lot of money, 20, 30, 40 euros or something like that.
Or you take out all the clothes and coats and just put them on, just wear them, just walk through with like four or five jumpers and two coats on.
Have you ever had to take baggage out of your suitcase because it was over the allowance? I have.
Yeah, once or twice, years ago.
And I did, because it was something like half a kilo or a quarter of a kilo, very slightly over. But they were going to make me pay something like £30 or something like that. And I said, no, hold on a minute. And I opened my case, took out a jumper or something like that, put it on and said, can you weigh, puedes pesar, can you weigh the case again? Then it was under the limit. Then I said, okay, now I'll check it in. I've done that too.
Yeah, I've taken stuff from my suitcase and put it in my hand luggage to make the suitcase weigh less. Another expression for hand luggage is carry-on, because you carry that bag onto the aeroplane. You board with the small bag. Where do you put your carry-ons?
In the overhead locker. So a locker is where you can store something, and it's above your head. It's an overhead locker. Or sometimes they let you put it under the seat in front of you as well.
Unless you're sitting next to the emergency exit.
Oh, right there, you know, because you have to keep the emergency exit clear, don't you?
It's a good place to sit because you get a lot of leg room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So planes take off. That's a phrasal verb. I took off at 6. What time does your plane take off? And the opposite of take off is?
To land.
To land. It's not put down. It's to land. So you have a smooth landing. You can have a bumpy flight, which means there's a lot of turbulence, turbulencia. So if there's a lot of turbulence, the flight is bumpy, a bumpy flight.
When you're on board, Craig, when you're on the plane and you're flying, which part of the plane are you sitting in?
You're sitting in the cabin. It's called the cabin. And the people who serve you, who bring you drinks, etc., are the cabin crew. That's the general name for the people who are attending you during the flight.
And if we wanted to use more specific names for cabin crew, what words could we use?
Well, it used to be words like steward, stewardess, or air hostess, but they're very gender specific. So I think it's more common these days to say flight attendant, which could be a man, it could be a woman. Mm-hmm. So cabin crew is the general term for people in the cabin who are there to assist you and look after your safety. And a flight attendant is the actual maybe job description. Do you agree?
Yes. And also there are different ranks, and I never remember exactly what they are, but I think there's something like the head steward, who has authority over the other stewards, but you can call them all flight attendants. Mm-hmm. Without distinguishing rank.
Is it purser?
Or purser, yeah. Maybe purser is the one who's in charge of the cabin. Yeah, could be. Craig, the other bit of the plane where people are working, the bit at the front, what's that called?
That's the flight deck, where the pilot is. The flight deck or the cockpit.
Mm-hmm. Normally these days they say flight deck on commercial planes, don't they? Cockpit sounds a bit more military or a bit more old-fashioned, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I can remember. Can you remember the days when you were flying, during the flight you could go into the cockpit and watch and sit with the pilots and watch them fly the plane? When I was young.
Oh, I've done it.
Yeah. I used to do that. Now, because of obviously terrorist attacks, it's locked. You can't go in.
Yeah. Something which will probably scare some listeners, rightly, thinking about it. I have been on a flight. I've been on a flight from London, British Airways, London to Karachi, I think it was, in Pakistan. Pakistan, you heard correctly, and they let me on the cockpit, fooling about with the captain, whatever. Do you think they would let anybody in a cockpit these days on a flight from London to Pakistan? I really don't think so. No, but I've done it. I've done it.
But those were the days when you could smoke at the back of the plane. Yeah, and they said, would you like a smoking or non-smoking seat? And it's a long time ago.
Yeah. Let me light that cigar for you, Mr. Bin Laden. Come and visit the cockpit. Have a look.
So the flight crew, the captain, the flight attendants, the first officer, second officer of the people flying the plane and working on the plane. What's the name of the people who work for the airline, Reza, but they're in the airport or on the ground?
So if they're not on the flight, they're the ground staff. So we mentioned earlier the check-in staff, but also the ground staff includes baggage handlers, the ones who handle, who carry and transport your baggage.
And throw,
even if it says fragile on it.
And break.
It says fragile, there's a sticker. Do they pay attention? No, they throw it anyway. And also the maintenance staff. They're the technical people, the engineers, the technicians who look after the planes.
How do you say in English, pista de aterrizaje?
It's difficult to say, isn't it?
You ask me.
how do you say pista de aterrizaje?
Runway.
Yes.
Runway.
And what can a plane do on the runway?
Well, the plane is taxiing. So the verb is to taxi. You probably know the word taxi as a noun, a taxi cab. But the verb to taxi means to move into position or get in the correct position to take off.
So planes taxi. Taxis don't taxi. Planes taxi.
What does to cruise mean?
Well, a typical thing you might
hear
on board.
Does it mean to sail on a boat?
It can mean that. But on a plane, you might hear, we are now cruising at 20,000 feet. That means we are flying in the middle of the flight. We're not in the middle of the takeoff. We're not in the middle of the landing. We're just flying at a steady kind of speed. That's cruising.
Just one, I'd like to sort of sidetrack for a minute to digress, which means to go off at a tangent, at an angle, because I think it's interesting the difference in two future tenses when we think of flying and pilots. For example, the future simple with will and the future continuous with be plus gerund. It's very unusual for a pilot to say, we'll cruise at 20,000 feet because it's a kind of a decision at the moment of speaking. If you imagine a pilot saying, we'll cruise at 20,000 feet today. No, we won't. We'll cruise at 50. No, we'll cruise at 25,000, I think. No, I think we'll probably cruise. It's very uncertain. It gives you little confidence. If the pilot says today, ladies and gentlemen, will be cruising at 20,000 feet. It means it's something that's going to happen as a matter of course, something that's naturally, progressively going to happen. And it's more comforting and reassuring for the passengers.
Yeah, using the future continuous.
Yeah.
We will be cruising.
We'll be flying over the Alps. We'll be crossing the southern Pyrenees. We'll be cruising at this altitude.
It's the idea that at any given time, this action or that action will be in progress because it's all planned. It's all planned. There's nothing to worry about.
It will be a bit scary if you heard, we'll fly over Germany. I think we'll fly over France today.
Yeah, I've changed my mind.
He doesn't know what he's doing. What's he doing? What's jet lag?
Well, jet lag is something that you might get, for example, if you do a red-eye flight.
Yep.
In other words, you fly a long distance or at a strange time or it's just uncomfortable in some way. Your body feels strange when you arrive at your destination. Perhaps the time is different because America, for example, is 6 or 7 hours behind Europe. So you'll feel jet lag. Your body will feel strange.
Mainly because of the change in time, the time zone changes. So your body thinks it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but really it's 2 o'clock in the morning. So your body changes, your body clock is not synchronized. If you want to see a wonderful example of this, I don't know if you've seen the film Lost in Translation with Bill Murray.
Oh, yes, that's a great film.
When Bill Murray is in the hotel, he's got jet lag, he can't sleep, the curtains are moving automatically. It's a wonderful film, and it's a great example of jet lag.
He wakes up when everyone else is asleep because his body clock is in American time and he's in Japan.
Goes to the bar, starts drinking because he can't sleep.
Now, Craig, something which we will never have because we don't charge any money for our podcasts is a private jet. What is a private jet?
It's pretty obvious. A private jet is a jet that belongs to you. So you fly when and where you want to fly. So very rich businessmen and famous people like Bill Gates or...
Donald Trump.
They'll have private jets.
We normally think of it as quite a small plane because it's private.
And quite luxurious usually as well with a bar and very comfortable seats.
Funny, we call it a private jet and maybe there could be a private plane which isn't a jet because not all planes are jet planes. We've also got propeller planes.
Not all planes have jet engines. Some of them have a propeller.
Propeller, the bits that go round and round and round. In fact, in the last year, I've flown on 3 or 4 flights, which were on propeller planes.
Mm-hmm.
3 or 4. Craig, what's the control tower?
It's a big tower at an airport in which the people sit who control the takings off, the planes that take off and the planes that land. And they direct the air traffic from the tower.
Aha. They control the air traffic. They're the air traffic controllers, or ATCs. Air traffic controllers. Oh, what people. What people they are. If you're not sure what I mean by air traffic controller, just watch the news around about Easter time, and you'll hear how French air traffic controllers have gone on strike. Again, they do this every Easter without fail. You could set your watch to it. They go on strike, Athenwelga, for more money. So
I'm not sure I agree with that. It's not always the air traffic controllers. It's sometimes the French baggage handlers.
Yeah, as well. Yes,
and the ground staff as well.
Sometimes it's ground staff too, isn't it? Yeah. By the way, I did a little bit of internet research, and I'm probably about to lose one or two of our listeners because of it. But I discovered that I've always been amazed at how much air traffic controllers earn in general. But in Spain, it's something else.
Do they earn a good salary?
Guess what, according to what I found on the internet, the basic salary is for a Spanish air traffic controller. First of all, I'll ask you a question. Which country do you think earns the highest for air traffic controllers? The UK, France, Germany, or Spain? Which one do you think is the highest?
Well, I know that Heathrow is one of the biggest airports in the world. So
correct.
That would make me think maybe, I would say, either Britain or Germany.
No, it's Spain. Spain,
really?
By a long distance, really? Is where they pay the most generous.
How much do they earn?
Guess. The basic salary. It can get much, much higher than this, but the basic salary, guess it.
Well, if you're saying it's high, I don't know, 32,000, 33,000 euros a year?
180,000 a year.
You're kidding me?
Yeah.
Wow. That's serious money.
Yeah.
That's serious money.
In Spain. In the United Kingdom, it's about 70,000.
Reza, we're in the wrong profession.
In France, it's 90. So although they do go on many strikes in France, actually the Spanish earn about double what the French do.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'd never have guessed that. That's incredible.
Yeah, I've met a few air traffic controllers in Spain. I don't know them very well, but I met a few, and they're immensely rich. I've met women who are air traffic controllers, friends of friends, and it's very common for them to buy an extremely expensive dress, wear it once, and give it to someone. That's how rich they are. I know because I know friends of mine who get secondhand clothes from air traffic controllers, like designer dresses, which they buy for one occasion. Then they give it away to somebody. That's how rich air traffic controllers are in Spain. Yep.
That surprises me. Really does.
That's the job for us. If there are any air traffic controllers out there, if you have a dinner jacket you don't want...
you're thinking of the conference, the podcast awards,
yes, where we are hoping to you know, go up on the stage, and we're supposed to be wearing a dinner jacket, but because we're poor podcasters, we don't have one.
Actually, I'm quite similar to an air traffic controller in the fact that I often buy clothes, wear them once and give them away, but not because I'm rich, because I put on weight and they don't fit me. What's baggage reclaim?
It's the place where you go to reclaim, to get back the bags that you checked on to the flight.
So that's the sign that people should look for in English in the airports. If you're flying internationally and you want your suitcase, look for baggage reclaim. That's where you need to go when you get off the aeroplane to get your baggage back, to claim your baggage. And if you go there, you'll see something that goes round and round and round and round, which is a carousel. So the baggage carousel is the thing that the kids sit on to go around with the suitcases.
So that's a baggage reclaim. Craig, if you're unlucky and your baggage is not on the carousel, it's gone missing, you will want to, now I'll say it in Spanish, vas a querer reclamar. How do we say that?
Like to go to lost baggage?
Yeah, and just reclamar. Reclamar is complain. If your baggage is not in the baggage reclaim, then como vas a reclamar, o sea, quejarse, you complain.
So reclamar y quejarse is the same word in English, complain.
Yes, but it is not reclaim, is it? Reclaim is where you go to get your bags.
Right.
And they're there, you reclaim them. Don't confuse it with the Spanish word reclamar, which is complain in English.
Yeah, it's a false friend.
Yeah, an important false friend.
Duty free, I think everybody knows, where you can buy reduced price, tax-free drinks and cigarettes and perfume. Customs and passport control, you have to pass through when you arrive at your destination. Show your passport at passport control. Go through the green if you have nothing to declare.
And similar, but not exactly the same, is airport security. Customs or passport control, make sure your documentation is correct and that you're not carrying anything that you shouldn't because you have to pay a tax for it or something like that. However, airport security just want to make sure you're not going to kill anybody. It's a different job.
Yeah.
Security is their name. Security is their game and their name. So they're checking you for guns, for weapons, for knives, etc., for liquids that you shouldn't have, and to make sure that you've no more than, I think it's 50 centiliters of whatever it is you have in your toilet bag, etc. If you've got a big bottle of water, they'll make you leave it behind and things like that. What do you think of airport security, Craig?
I think to a certain extent it's necessary, but I don't believe in the way that they have air security in place at the moment. I don't think it's very effective. What do you think?
There are some things which I can't get my head around.
There's a need for it. You have to admit, you know, we want to be safe when we fly. We want to make sure we're not going to be blown up in the air. Mm-hmm. But I can't see that it's effective.
For me, it's absolutely necessary, but there are one or two very specific things which I just cannot see any logic to. Here comes a rant from me. A rant is an intense complaint, una queja intensa, a rant. The water business. What a carry-on. Que lío, que tomador de pelo.
It's not a carry-on because you can't carry on.
You can't carry on. Exactly. No carry-on. No carry-on water. That is the most ridiculous thing. The theory is you can't bring on water, or you can only bring on tiny amounts of water in quantities that are so small that they don't sell bottles that size, because you might use it to mix a bomb on the plane. Because apparently it is possible, if you are technically very advanced and you know how to, if you're a bomb maker, apparently they say it's possible to mix water and certain chemicals and you can have a potential explosive.
It could be a clear liquid explosive.
Yeah. So you use the water, you mix it with chemical. Okay. I say, what nonsense, because we all carry much more than a small bottle of water with us anywhere we go. It's called your bladder, vejiga. All you would have to do is urinate. It would have the same effect. You get my point? They say, oh, you can't bring water on because that water could be... I could go into the bathroom and urinate.
Yeah, but to do that, you'd have to have a bomb in your system, wouldn't you? You'd have to have explosive liquid that you're urinated out. Otherwise, it wouldn't explode. I think they're taking away the water because they think it might be liquid explosive that's clear.
Oh, is it not that if you can mix it with something, if it was liquid explosive, it would have not already blown up in the airport?
Well, it wouldn't just be, they're not worried that it's water because there's water in the toilets in the plane.
Right.
What they're worried about is that it looks like water.
Yeah.
But it is in fact some kind of liquid like glycerine or some kind of liquid explosive that they could mix or use to explode. So you can't actually piss that out.
Oh, I thought it was that you could mix it with something to make the explosive.
Well, there's water on the plane anyway, so
exactly.
It doesn't make sense.
But this is my point, why it doesn't make sense.
No, I think it's because it could be some clear kind of glycerin-based explosive.
Why not make you drink a bit in front of them then? See if you blow up?
Maybe there's some explosive that you could drink a little bit, it wouldn't harm you, but yeah, it could blow up.
Yeah. I'm still not convinced. I understand the reason why, but to me it's nonsense. But I know that if I owned a bottled water company, I would be extremely happy right now, because it's such a rip-off. Es un timo. The bottled water sales in the airport, they know that we all need water. They know you cannot carry it through the security. So what happens? Surprise, surprise. You get through security and bottled water costs a fortune.
Yeah, it's really expensive in airports, isn't it? Bottled water. I think we paid about €4 in Paris recently for a bottle of water. It's, what annoys me, though, is that every airport seems to have different things that they focus on. There are some airports where you must take out any computers, any phones, any iPads. There are some where you have to show your toiletries, your shaving foam, your soap, your shampoo in clear plastic bottles or clear plastic bags. And some airports just don't care about certain things. They don't ask you for that. Some airports you have to take off your boots and your shoes. Some airports you don't. It's not standardized. So that makes me think, why? Why isn't it standardized as a safety measure?
Do you enjoy traveling by air, Craig?
No.
Why not?
Because of some of the things you're saying, because of the queues, because of the hassle, which means the disturbances and the inconveniences of the security checks, of passport control. There are always queues. To eat and drink in airports is very expensive. And there's this kind of idea that your life is kind of frozen when you're traveling in airports. If you have to wait for a connecting flight, which means you stop in one airport and you wait for the next flight, time kind of freezes. It stands still. It doesn't move. It's like a parallel world or a parallel universe of people sitting there doing different things like reading or eating. And it's just weird. It's strange to me, and I don't enjoy it. The way I deal with it is I take a sleeping pill on the plane to make sure I sleep well. I read a lot, and I listen to podcasts, and I pass the time, and I kind of just try and be as patient as possible.
Flying is the ideal time to listen to podcasts, isn't it? There couldn't be a better time.
Especially this one.
Yep.
Do you like flying?
No, I don't.
For the same reasons?
For the same reasons. Apart from the water thing I mentioned on the ground, I have another pet hate while I'm on board.
What's a pet hate?
A pet hate
is... You hate your cats and dogs.
No. A pet hate is your own particular idiosyncratic hate. Something
a special thing that
annoys you specifically. And mine is being stuck in the middle of a row of seats.
Me too.
As I said earlier, I'd rather have the aisle seat. Mm. If I can't, in the window seat. But not the one in the middle. Please, no. I hate the one in the middle. I feel really trapped.
Do you recline your seat if you're on a long flight? Do you put your seat back so that you can be more comfortable? Or do you worry about disturbing the person behind you?
I always ask for permission before I do it. I would never do it without asking first. So I would turn around and say, do you mind if I put my seat back? And if they say no, I do it. But if they say, oh, I'd rather you didn't, then I wouldn't. What about you?
I'm English, so I have a special system because English people don't really like speaking to strangers on flights. I just go back very, very slowly over a period of 15 or 20 minutes. So I'll just go back just a little and then wait. And then go back a little bit more and then wait. And press the button again and go back with the hope that the person behind doesn't notice my seat is going back.
I've just thought of another pet hate, come to think of it. It doesn't happen very often, but occasionally, if you have a kid behind you, a child, that in itself is no problem. But
if they're quiet, it's no problem.
If they're quiet, if they're noisy, and above all, if they kick the back of your seat.
Oh, man.
That's so irritating.
I hate that. Irritating. That really winds me up.
And some parents let them. So there they are kicking the back of your seat, and the mom or dad thinks, oh, that's very funny. No, it isn't. That's my back you're kicking. It's not funny at all.
So listeners, if you have children, make sure they're not sitting behind Reza next time they fly.
If they're noisy, if they're sleepy, that's okay.
And now it's your turn to practice your English. What's the worst flight you've ever had? Have you had any bad flying experiences? Why not send us a voice message and practice your speaking? You can send us a voice message at speakpipe.com. That's speakpipe/Inglês podcast. Or you could write us an email to me, Craig, at inglespodcast.com.
Or to reza@belfastreza@gmail.com.
And please let us know if you have any questions about English or an idea for something for us to speak about in a future episode. And if you would like to become a sponsor of the show, you can go to patreon.com/inglespodcast. And Reza would like to thank our 9 wonderfully lovely sponsors, who are...
Thank you to Lara, Mamin, Thara, Sara, Juan, Corey Finnerin from IVMV Podcast, Rafael, Daniel, and Manuel.
Thank you very, very much. On next week's episode, we'll be speaking about extreme sports. Until then, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.